Mr. Schaefer, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate, and it's wonderful that you could get in touch with us today. And we are approaching very important data. It's 29th of March, 20 years already since we joined NATO. With other six countries, we were seven countries all together. And at that time, you were NATO Secretary General, and it was quite massive enlargement. And I would like to ask you first, how important and special, and what for you does it mean to be at the time as Secretary General and to give this green light for so many countries?
Well, of course, it was a very special occasion on the lawn of the old NATO building in Brussels, I remember. And I remember telling my wife, who was there, and she told me that we concluded, seeing that ceremony and seeing the emotions, the tears, literally the tears on the faces of political leaders of the nations joining, that we said to each other as Dutchmen, we had underestimated the emotion, what this meant to those nations, until we saw their emotions, your emotions. So it was a very special occasion. And we also realized that, I mean, in this part of Europe, where I come from, the Western part of Europe, we should know more, and that's as relevant now as it was then, we should know more about the history. Let's take the Baltic nations as an example, where there was domination by others. There was domination by the Bolsheviks, by communism, then the Nazis, then the Soviet Union came back. I mean, your history shows how emotional that moment on the lawn of the NATO building was. What you have gone through in the course of your history, infringements, killing of your independence, and that's why I'm up till this very day very happy that it happened then in 2004.
In 2 year time, 2006, there was a NATO summit in Riga already. It was quite fast for the new member state. And at that time, Afghanistan was the main issue of concern. But how do you remember this summit in Riga, which was super special for us? But for you, was it also meaningful that it was taking place in new member state of NATO?
Absolutely, and I remember pushing very hard for it as NATO Secretary General. Very, very special indeed to be there, to have the NATO summit there. Our host was President Vika Freiberga. She's a giant. One of the female giants I met in my during my mandate. She was the host. It was indeed the summit was focused on Afghanistan, but the political signal, also then going to Moscow, although the relationship with Russia was much less worse than it is now. It was a signal, a political important signal, that NATO, as this most important political military alliance in the world, is meeting in Riga, is meeting in the Baltic states, is showing that the Baltic states, every inch of them, are now part of NATO territory, and that the integrity of that NATO territory will be defended with everything NATO has and everything we have. So the political signal going out there was of fundamental importance, I think.
Is it still strong since then?
From time to time, I might come to the conclusion that it is not strong enough. I mean, let me be a bit self-critical as well. We in this Western part of Europe, we have not sufficiently listened to warnings coming from the Baltic states, coming from Poland, coming from the Eastern European allies, from NATO, within NATO, that we should take their position, your position, and more specifically Vladimir Putin and Russia more seriously. I think in the relative comfort, geographic comfort, where we live in The Hague or Paris or Brussels or Madrid or Rome or Athens or you name them, we should have listened more carefully. And the lesson I'm drawing from this period is that also in our education, educating our younger people who will be at the helm of state affairs before they realize, we should do everything we can to make that Europe a whole Europe, if you understand what I mean. That's why it is important that we keep the discussion on Ukraine and NATO membership alive, difficult as it is. That's why it is extremely important that Ukraine has been offered EU candidate membership together with Moldova and to a large extent Georgia. That's why these elements are important. But if you want to influence public opinion, let's take my country as an example, which is critical from time to time in this part of Europe vis-a-vis EU and further NATO enlargement. I mean, people should know, and the younger generation should know much more about the history of your part of Europe, because you are Europe, and that's what the younger generation should also realize. But then it's up to us in our education system to work on this notion that freedom doesn't come for free, that we have a horrible war on the European continent, a war of aggression. When Putin wins this war, if Putin wins this war, I should say in correct English, if he wins this war, it is the end of the Europe I have grown up with, you and I have known, the younger generation knows. It's really the end of Europe. So he should never be in a position and never be allowed to win. And there the signals coming from the Baltic states are as clear as they can be.
That's right. Mr. Schaefer, in 2008, there was a NATO summit in Bucharest, and you were standing next to the Ukrainian president at the time, Viktor Yushchenko, and you said Ukraine will become member of NATO. We found video about that. Do you think it had to be done earlier? I mean, Ukraine already had to be had to join NATO earlier than we are discussing about it now, but it should be done maybe much, much earlier.
But the problem was, and that's why Bucharest was not NATO's finest hour, the problem was, and the problem is, let me add that as well, that there is no consensus within NATO about Ukrainian membership. Then in 2008, you will remember, I do remember vividly, there was a big political fight, big political disagreement between President George W. Bush, the American president on the one hand, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and the French president then Sarkozy on the other hand. This was a political fight which ended in communique language, which read, I'm quoting literally now from the communique, they will become NATO members. And they was then not only Ukraine, but also Georgia. Standing next to President Yushchenko, I realized, I remember vividly, that I realized what's happening here, because NATO cannot deliver. We might write in a communique that Ukraine will become a NATO member, but consensus was as far away as it is now. May I refer to the most recent NATO summit in Vilnius, where also there was language on Ukraine and NATO, but it was not definite language. It was not clear language. And NATO will face the same problem in Washington at the summit coming July on Ukraine and NATO. So I felt a bit in Bucharest dishonest with myself because there was some hypocrisy in that communique language. And the situation has not fundamentally changed, or one might say changed not for the better, because now there is a president in the White House, President Joe Biden, who is not keen as we speak on seeing Ukraine joining NATO. So the situation was complicated in Bucharest in 2008. And so many years later, as we speak, it is still very complicated. And I don't expect, quite honestly, I don't expect an invitation for Ukraine at the NATO summit in Washington, 75 years celebration of NATO. when allied leaders will meet there in July.
But in general, do you see that it's optimistic that Ukraine might join NATO at all one day?
Well, I still think that's this discussion should be held in NATO. At the moment, of course, the situation is even more complicated and very sad for the Ukrainians politically, because the Russians have annexed / are occupying about 20% of sovereign Ukraine, Donbass and Crimea. So now the opponents of NATO membership, they have the argument also used by NATO more in general. Listen, as long as there's a war going on, Ukraine cannot possibly join NATO. At the same time, the same NATO allies, and that makes me sad from time to time, are not doing enough to bring Ukraine in the position that they can win this war. I still don't see the Taurus cruise missiles, long-range cruise missiles, who should be, in my opinion, earlier rather than later, being delivered by Germany. I don't see them. I do see Western nations whose fear of escalation has been, since the beginning of this war of aggression, whose fear of escalation has been stronger than the confidence in our own deterrence capabilities. And that is something serious. Putin should never be allowed to win this war. Ukraine should win this war. And things are not going well everywhere. I mean, Ukraine is very successful in the Black Sea. There is a maritime corridor for grain and wheat exports and what have you. Ukraine keeps the Russian Navy at the Black Sea at a distance. We have seen Sweden and Finland joining NATO, which is a marking events for those nations, but also for NATO. Putin thought he would round up Ukrainians and Ukraine in 3 weeks. He is at 20%, which is 20% too much, of course. So it's on the ground, it's not going that well with Ukraine along some parts of the front on the land. But still, we are not serious enough, including the Americans, by still blocking $60 billion a package of financial support. The same goes for Europe. We are still not going all the way, and we'll pay a tremendously heavy price if we don't.
Why? Are we afraid of Russia, or we don't have resources, or we simply don't want Russia to lose? What's the reason of that?
We do have the resources. The European Union is a financial economic giant, a huge market. I mean, comparable to the United States of America and China. So nobody is going to sell the idea to me that the European Union and Europe cannot pay up for Ukraine. Of course we can. The only thing is, as is embedded in your question, the only thing is that there is no political consensus, and then I'm referring to the European Union rather than to NATO, because NATO as an alliance as such, of course, is not directly involved and doesn't want to be directly involved in that war. But during my mandate, the same during the mandate of Anders Fogh Rasmussen, my successor, the same with Jens Stoltenberg, the present Secretary of NATO, there is no political consensus on the EU or / NATO-Russia policy. And Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin knows it, and he uses it. He has the time. The Taliban in Afghanistan always told me, you might have a watch, but we have the time. Putin acts according to the same principle. He can wait and see how the US presidential elections go. How are the European Union elections going early June? Will there be a surge in populist parties? Will there be more Putin addicts or Putin Versteher in German in important voices inside the European Union, and as a consequence in NATO? So the lack of the consensus is I think our major impediment. And as I said, I repeat, the fear of escalation, which has been since the very beginning bigger than the belief, the trust, the confidence in our own deterrent capability. And that's behind the German reticence of delivering the Star Wars missiles.
How to win this war? This is a question which Ukrainians also are asking us when we go to Ukraine, and we do it regularly. So what is the key thing to win this war?
Well, first of all, to maximize our weapon support to Ukraine. We've come a long way. I mean, we started, as you might remember, with flak jackets and helmets. And now the Dutch, my government, and the Danes, quite rightly, are delivering soon a number of F-16 fighter aircraft to him. The Ukrainian pilots are being trained in Romania as we speak. So we should, as far as weapon deliveries and weapon support and assistance is concerned, and as far as financial assistance is concerned, do everything we can. I mean, to provide Ukraine with money and with weapons, and support them. That is what we can do, and that is what we should do. Putin can easily convert parts of his economy into a war economy. For democracies, that's much more complicated. Democracies are slow. They're fine, and it's the best system we have, but they are slow. In the political DNA of our European, certainly Western European democracies, is much more stability and peace than war. And I come back to the younger generation again. We have to explain to them that freedom doesn't come for free. The famous Roman saying, "Si vis pacem, parabellum," you want peace, prepare for war. That is still extremely relevant in our time. So what we need, to use a comparison, is Western European gene editing, DNA editing, as is possible under present circumstances, to make people familiar not only with stability and peace, but with war as well. And we should win this war. Ukraine should win this war. It is not Ukraine's war, it's our war, but they are dying in the trenches. By the tens of thousands of people. We are sitting in the relative comfort, but what we can do is support Ukraine with weapons and with money. And that's what we are not doing enough.
I want to ask you about boots on the ground. France said something on that direction. Do you think that might be an idea?
I don't see that happening as far as I can see at the moment. I think President Macron brought more nuance in his statement than the headline captions. Macron is going to send boots on the ground. I could imagine at a certain stage that as far as maintenance and training is concerned, there would be boots on the ground. Let me give you the example that for the maintenance of an F-16 aircraft, I think you need 15 to 20 people around that one single aircraft for maintenance. Who is going to do it? And are the Ukrainians capable of doing it? So I could imagine that apart from fighting boots on the ground, where it concerns maintenance, and that might well be what President Macron has meant, that we go one step further than what we have done up till now, but fighting boots on the ground, I do not see, unless of course Vladimir Putin would become over ambitious and threaten NATO territory. I mean, at the moment, I think the Russian armed forces are not capable giving Ukraine, or for instance, giving it a try in one of the Baltic countries. But what always could happen in theory and in practice, by the way, is that Putin starts to sow unrest in Narva, in Estonia, where you have the Russian speaking majority. I mean, and then tests NATO's readiness. He might test NATO's readiness at a certain stage. We now see Russian ballistic missiles for half a minute, but it's still relevant across crossing over Polish territory. I mean, this might have been an incident. I don't know. I hope it was an incident, But Putin might test NATO at a certain stage, and that's why we should be alert and we should be ready. And NATO should completely go into the mode of deterrence by denial. So much strengthening its eastern front, including in the Baltic states, that Putin would not even dare to attack. And that's completely different from what we had. Denial by punishment. We had the flags flying. Now we should have boots on the ground on the whole eastern flanks of NATO to deter Putin forever doing something again.
I have a couple of more things, if I may. For you personally, 24 February 24, when war started in Ukraine, could you believe that it might happen actually one day?
No, I must give you the honest answer that I didn't expect this. Although I have never trusted Vladimir Putin, of course, met him a number of times during my active NATO days. I've never trusted him, and I know about his obsession. I always tell my students at university, what's the difference between an ambition and an obsession? Putin is obsessed by the phrase, "I want my empire back." Be it the Peter the Great, the Tsarist Empire, be it the Soviet Empire, I want my empire back. I have the right to consider Ukraine as Russia, as my own, to consider Georgia as my own, to consider Moldova as my own. The Baltic states basically belong to Russia and to the Russian Empire. And that is an obsession he will have and carry with him until he dies. Or is deposed, or ends in jail, which I might hope at a certain stage. That is his obsession. So I knew about this obsession because I've met the guy in a number of times, and he's the same Vladimir Vladimirovich as he was in my active days. So no, I must honestly answer. I did not expect him to go in February 2 years ago. But when American intelligence services started to communicate out in the open that this was imminent, I think I understood, if I remember well, that this might be the beginning of an all-out war. But again, we were, of course, unprepared in NATO and in the European Union, unprepared for this massive war of aggression Putin initiated in that horrible month of February.
Yeah, we're coming back to the previous question. So his obsession is so big that even I think personally that NATO has a huge potential to fight against anyone. But so would really Russia and Putin be so crazy to decide to attack NATO, knowing that it might lead to completely, I mean, disaster for Russia?
I hope he's not, because Putin can never win a war, a conventional war against NATO. That might take NATO some time. It might take some time for NATO, but Putin can never win a conventional war. He has been saber-rattling with nuclear weapons. But I think the Chinese have explained to Putin that he should never do that. And the Chinese, of course, Xi Jinping is the big uncle for Vladimir Putin, who is the young nephew. But they have this limitless friendship, excuse me, this limitless bond. I think also the Americans behind the scenes have been making clear to Putin that he should never dare to use a nuclear weapon because the reaction might be horrible and devastating for him. So I quite honestly do not think that it will come that far, and that Putin is realistic enough that he can't win a full-blown war against NATO. He would, by the way, lose the South, the global South as well in doing that. I mean, the global South, India, Indonesia, Brazil, the BRICS, and so on, they are not fully supporting us, the West. For them, Ukraine is sometimes a faraway war, and they tell us that liberal international order you are pretending to defend is not exactly our liberal order. The global South is winning in influence. coming back to my answer, if Putin would use weapons of mass destruction, I think or threatened with weapons of mass destruction, he might lose the global south, and China, in its bond with Putin, and we in the West, of course, are competing for the attention and the support of the global south. India is, in my opinion, a nation which could bridge the gap between the West and the global south. So that is a key nation politically, in my opinion. And Putin might also listen to Narendra Modi in this regard. We should see it in a bit wider geopolitical perspective in this regard, where there will be pressure on Putin not to go too far. That's what I mean to say.
Finally, Mr. Schäfer, the fact that Sweden and Finland finally joined NATO, on your opinion, was it just a matter of time for these two countries, or Russia's war in Ukraine was the main aspect why they decided to do that? And as a NATO, what do we gain after both countries decided to be part of the NATO?
Well, it was absolutely triggered by Putin's war of aggression against Ukraine. Absolutely, because without that war, I think Finland and Sweden would never have made this, for them, dramatic move. I mean, look at Sweden and its neutrality. Look at Finland. I'm very happy, very very happy that they have joined NATO. I mean, let's not forget, they are both highly valued partners politically, but also militarily. State-of-the-art armed forces. The Finns have never forgotten the 1939 Winter War against the Soviet Union then. Sweden has gone on in investing in its armed forces, while we in NATO, to a large extent, we're sitting at ease and enjoying a geopolitical holiday. The Finns and the Swedes, like the Baltic states, geography matters greatly in international relations, of course. The Finns and the Swedes went on investing in their armed forces. We didn't. It will now take us 15 to 20 years to rebuild our armed forces. We have woken up in shock after the Putin move inside Ukraine and his war. So it's a huge plus to have Sweden and Finland on board. It is a huge minus for Putin, because if you look at the geography, if you look at the Baltic Seas, I mean it's now an inner lake of NATO. Think about the strategic importance of Gotland, which the Swedes and NATO will now quickly militarize. So there are, as I said earlier in this interview, there are pluses, huge pluses, and I enjoy very much Sweden's and Finland's accession to NATO. It's a huge step. It's a very important step.
Mr. Schäfer, thank you so much for this interview.
It was a great pleasure. All the best to you, and thank you for being with you and on your show. Thank you.